You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Happy birthday to Ozzy Osbourne and Andy Williams. Big day today on the Wake Up Tucson show. Good morning to Tom Callahan. Tom, how are you doing, sir?
Good morning. I like you letting the birthday boy stretch his legs a little bit there.
Absolutely.
It was nice.
Why not? Why not?
Why not?
Most people say, especially people at the county administrator's office, says more Huckleberry, less Ozzy, less D. Simone. So.
Well, I mean, I can always get behind more Ozzy just about any time.
Correct. So he's, I don't know how old Ozzy is today, but we'll figure it out. Maybe we don't even care. He's so eternally young, it doesn't matter.
Maybe we just shouldn't know.
Right. Don't meet your heroes and don't know their ages before it's all over. We know Britney Spears is 39, though.
We do know that.
I hope that makes people feel old that Britney Spears was 39. So let's say we got to do today. We got the, we'll talk a little bit about the Requena, as Fran LaSala would call her, Mayor Romero's state of the city. Now, there's interesting questions. Why now? Because usually it's something that's done in the first quarter of a year. And we're going to talk about her. What did she say about public safety, which we know is one of her weakest links? And that's hilarious. So we got to do that. And then we got the Gov's press conference yesterday. So we got to do that. In the Gov's press conference, the interesting thing was at the end, all of a sudden, he says there's this new two strikes rule that's going to be levied against businesses, where Doug says he's going to put you out of business. So we'll talk about that. I'd love to see how all that gets. So that's going to be an interesting take on that, because he's going to have to work with our wonderful Pima County Health Department. So we're going to talk about that before it's all over. I know we have Congressman Schweikert moved to tomorrow, okay? So he's not calling in at 7 today. He's going to be first hour tomorrow. Andy Biggs in the third hour tomorrow. So it's my double congressperson day tomorrow, which will be great to catch up with both of them. Today we got the intern, Ryan Larson, Michael Beatrice, and then election author Jonathan Jakubowski. Jakubowski. Is he like now?
That's what it says.
So give him a holler.
All righty.
Let's give him a holler. I got some cards in the mail today. We got letters, like we say in the old. Let's see what I got here. Let's see. When it comes, you appear to come to your major crossroads. Been there, done that. Older than dirt, but still above it. Happy birthday from Bill number one. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yes, my birthday is this weekend, so some of you have forgotten. I'm not one of those people that go out of my way to hate my birthday or love my birthday. It's just a thing of life. This is from Matt and Kelly. There's a blow to the left. There's another blow to the left. There's a right, and another. Look at that. Thank you, Matt and Kelly. I appreciate that. And then, this is from my buddy Deb Ferns. I can't believe she remembered my birthday. That's crazy. How do I wish you a happy I don't know who let this out. Probably got to be Ed. I think Ed got me. Do I wish you a happy birthday? Has a picture of a turtle, and it says Shell, yes. Anyway, happy birthday from Deb and Gary Ferns. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's very, very nice. So I don't know if I'm becoming more mature over time, because that's always a big question. But supposedly, we'll see what happens. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to another Goldwater interview tomorrow with Leeds attorney Tim Sandifer, who's going to talk about the Pima County Worldview case, believe it or not. So that means he always gets a letter, gets a letter from Huckleberry after he comes on the show. So we got that going for us. How are we looking, young man?
We're not looking bad. Believe it or not, I think we caught Jonathan Jakubowski a little by surprise. He thought we were going at 8:07, but he says he can go now if you're ready.
Well, as we like to say, you know what happens is it's the Eastern time thing, right? So it's probably sent to him that it was 8 o'clock Eastern. and 6:07.
Right, right. So he's ready.
What time is it now? Let's do this. Let's go to. I don't want to cut him short for break.
Okay.
So Jonathan, if you're listening, I'm sure he can listen right now. Is we're gonna go to get some great commercials in, and then we'll come back and we'll sit down with Jonathan Jakubowski, and we'll talk about the rural divide in America. So, wake up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Andy Williams, here we go. This is what happens when Ozzy and Andy Williams share the same birthday.
So, we're going to be bouncing back and forth.
Amen. 790-2040 is the phone number. Let's go right to the telephones, and thanks for holding on and being flexible and adjusting. We have author Jonathan Jakubowski, Bellwether Blues, A Conservative Waking to the Awakening, to the Millennial Soul of the Millennial Soul. Jonathan, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Chris. Hey, thanks for having me on.
Where are you calling from today?
I am calling from Northwest Ohio, Wood County.
And how did Wood County do in the what happened in Wood County in the 2020 election?
Well, what's interesting, it's a part of my analysis in Bellwether Blues, is there's a handful of Bellwether counties, 58 of 3,142, that went twice with Bush, twice with Obama, and once for Trump. So there were a lot of eyes focused on Wood County and the other 57 that are out there, and of the 58, 51 went for Trump, and Wood County was one of those by over 7 points.
Wow. Well, what did you see in the back end numbers that made that happen?
Well, there's primarily four demographics that really have caused Wood County to swing, especially from 12 to 16, and it remained the same in 20. And it's a new coalition of a working class vote. What Trump has done pretty incredibly is there's been a major shift in the electoral makeup in America, especially in these swing states. And there's a lot of these blue collar workers are workers that don't find themselves to be in the elite institutions or inside of the Beltway. And these individuals really find resonance with his American First policies and the things that he stood for. So that was the biggest demographic that caused the shift. And it counterbalanced some of the shift that's happened in some of the wealthier suburban communities, including in Wood County, where we see a reduction from the Republican vote and more of a vote towards Biden or towards the Democratic candidate. So those were the two primary factors in play in 2020.
One of our favorite guests is Congressman David Schweikert. He's up in the Phoenix area. I mean, he's a numbers wonk. And some of the numbers coming back that he's seeing is that maybe the Republican Party is now becoming the party of the working person instead of the other way around.
It was Senator Josh Hawley that kind of pointed that out, and I would argue that the future of the Republican Party needs to be emphasis on the working class party, but a multiracial working class party. As we see, there's trends moving in a very positive direction with Latino, Hispanic voters, with Asian voters, and even with black male voters, specifically in some of these urban areas. And as more and more of the elite whites leave the Republican Party and are seeming to embrace now the progressive vision, these individuals become all that more important. And they're more low propensity voters. So the message really has to resonate. And that there's a silver lining on this whole election. And it is kind of seen in some of these voting demographics that came in our direction.
So the other thing, too, so in the title of your book, you say the millennial soul. Right. Tell me about the millennial and the Republican Party and how they vote and their activism, because they always say, oh, they're such an important part. And then most of us don't believe they actually show up. So what are you saying?
Yeah, right, right. That was what I wanted to analyze. Millennials are aged between 24 and 39 years of age. And I wanted to write about that generation because I'm a part of that generation. And there's a lot of assumptions or assertions about the millennials that aren't necessarily true. For starters, not all millennials are the same. The millennials on the coast in Los Angeles and Seattle are very different from millennials in swing states in mainland America, like Arizona and Ohio. Different values, different background. Moreover, there's a lot of changes and shifts in kind of adulting. So this idea of delayed adulting, I think, does hold. But there's more people that are having families in mainland states. They're entering the job force. They're in engaging taxation. They view the world differently. And what I saw is this movement away from the left of the millennials. We've grown up and institutions that have really indoctrinated us with kind of left and center values. It has kind of been our prevailing worldviews. We look at social media feeds. So we are leaving the left because the left has gone so far radically left of center. But that does not mean that the millennials have embraced conservatism or the right. And that's really the aim of Bellwether Blues, is to provide a pathway forward for awakening the millennial soul, because many millennials are frustrated, skeptical, disillusioned. They have the blues as it relates to political engagement.
So what do we think about in relation to these, you know, what's going on in relation to these swing states and the president and lawsuits? And there's a lot of people in America, no matter how this plays out, that are going to think that their vote might be not worth much. So yeah, how does that play into that?
There's a lot of the dust is yet to settle on 2020. Let's put it that way. The dust is yet to settle on this election. And, you know, I think when 47% of Americans believe that this election was wrongful, it's not helpful. That's not a good thing. And I think the biggest issue I have is there were states that used the coronavirus pandemic as a way to create greater risks in the process, Pennsylvania being case in point, case number one. Universal mail-in ballots are a dangerous thing, especially when you add ballot harvesting to it like they did in Nevada. And it's going to debilitate confidence in the system, because it creates all sorts of fragilities within the system that allows for those that have a vision to manipulate the system to do so. And as I've told many, I mean, if I thought that Hitler was running for office, I would cheat. I would cheat to get him out of office. And there's many that are in these places that view Trump literally as Hitler. They've tweeted that way. They've talked that way. So
we actually just covered the story a couple of days ago, how the New York Times, of course, is referring to him as Hitler for challenging election results. So we like to say you really don't know who Hitler is. I don't want to get Tom, my board op, is a history major, so we already had this discussion, but yes.
Okay. Well, we don't have to cover the grounds then, but I'm saying is I don't know how much was out there. It's just the fragilities that were created by the changes in laws are problematic. And boards of elections like consistency and stability, much like the stock market, and when you change the laws, it really messes the system up and makes it more challenging to run elections.
What's some of the things that the Republican Party did better this year than they have in previous elections?
They reached out to low propensity voters. I mean, there was a record-setting number of votes at the top of the ticket, but that also carried its way down through the legislatures. The Republicans now have more legislative candidates that won office than I think in history. So it's for a long time, at least. Let's put it back over 100 years. They won legislatures throughout the country. They flipped New Hampshire. The New Hampshire legislature is now Republican-led.
Right.
So I think there were coattails, and it came from low-propensity voters who either hadn't voted previously or did vote with Democrats, who are shifted over and have voted it all the way down the ticket. And that is a big surprise and something that should give hope to Republicans, but the message has to continue to awaken them.
What's something the Republicans didn't do so great in 2020?
Well, they didn't do very well in the suburbs. In the wealthy suburbs, lost a lot of voters that traditionally vote Republican. Think of the kind of the soccer moms.
Yeah.
That syndrome, the folks that have a little more wealth. I think we see a lot of that in the shifts that are happening even in Maricopa County there in Arizona. There's a lot of individuals that are gaining wealth who are moving away because of the personality of President Trump. They didn't like the way he tweeted, communicated, and they found more confidence in Biden. That was a big hit, I think, on a lot of the ability to gain votes. And secondly, it's the cities. These big cities continue to plague elections for Republicans.
So what the president has done in relation to showing Republicans you don't have to back down, you can fight, you can, that America First message resonating with the working man and woman, he's not going to be around forever. Who are two or three other Republicans you think that can actually carry that torch as we move forward? Because there's a lot of them that had to be dragged into the Trump wake a little bit. And then you can say, I feel like there's some of them who, now that he's probably maybe not going to be president, are like, oh, Donald who?
Yeah, so there's this idea that this coalition is unsustainable without Donald Trump. And I think that argument is one to absolutely assess and consider, which means there has to be individuals that kind of carry the torch of that message while also being able to regain some of those lost voters. And I don't know if there's anybody that can perfectly fit that, but what I would say is there are individuals out there like Governor Kristi Noem, who really represents that fighting spirit up in the Dakotas. She's an individual that has kind of stood strong even as we've navigated COVID. I think people like Jim Jordan, you know, here in the state of Ohio, the congressman, who is a major fighter, those individuals have a lot of resonance. But I think there's some other individuals that are really interesting to look at, like DeSantis and Governor DeSantis in Florida, yeah, for example, who really delivered a really unique coalition of voters with the Cuban and the Venezuelan immigrants that came and voted in their direction. So those are a few names that I would think about it. And then there's always the outsiders. Like, I think one of the things that really resonated with the American people in 16 and throughout the last 4 years is that Donald Trump was not a politician. You know, he didn't have public office before this. He was a businessman. So there's always individuals out there who could be incredibly unique. And I'm thinking like Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs, somebody like right. that kind of resonates with the American people would be an interesting candidate.
So if the president, you felt like just kind of that was always our thing, right? It was like, we love a lot of the actions that he's done. We love the idea that he opened the economy up for so many people of all different demographics to participate and succeed. If he could just hold back a little bit on some of the tweets and stuff, and also COVID, right? Because the other thing that killed him in this is COVID. But mm-hmm. if he just ratcheted back on some of the tweets and stuff, do you think he wins in a better way?
So a lot of the folks that decided to bail on the Republican Party did so specifically because of his personality. Now, what's interesting about my analysis of millennials is those millennials that are beginning to vote Republican have kind of abandoned the idea of voting for personality, which is why I think there were many millennials in mainland America that did jump into Trump's camp, whether they're immigrants or Latinos or are they're working class voters. They saw policies as most effective and far-reaching in their life. However, there were many voters, including the suburb voters, that they just really struggled with how he spoke, talked, aggressively pursued his enemies. And I think if there was a way to change that communication, a way to maybe communicate differently or hold back some of the tweets that went out fast, maybe some of those voters would have come over and voted in his direction.
I think one of the lessons we're finding with the Latin voter in Tucson, where we're at, Southern Arizona, very heavily Latin influence, is the idea that they don't want to be called Latinx, right? They hate that crap. Okay. We've learned that. But at the same time, they are responding first as family people, small business owners, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And not, mm-hmm. I think a lot of them are getting sick of, I'm being categorized as a Latino first and not these mm-hmm. other things. And I think that is mm-hmm. a path to success for the Republican Party in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we share values very much so. I have a nonprofit down in Guatemala that works with at-risk fatherless youth, and I speak Spanish. I have brother-in-laws that are from the region. One of the things I would say is I think our values are aligned: faith, family, and freedom. Those things fit nicely within individuals that are in that worldview, whatever we want to call them, Hispanics, Latinos, they are Americans. And as Americans, one of the things they recognized in their history is how totalitarian and big government approaches to politics have created devastation in their lives and their lineages and their histories. And that's what makes America so attractive. And they don't view what many of the left views as America as damning and damaging and devastating. They want to see America thrive, and they've seen what America is and why it's the light that brought them here, the families here in the first place.
Yeah, and they don't like that defund police thing either, because a lot of them left countries where security was their basic security, their family was a problem. And then you come to a place like Tucson where all these people are yelling defund the police. And they're like, I don't Absolutely. Know if I want that. So, hey, we're running out of Absolutely. Time, but congratulations on the book, Bellwether Blues. Where do people get their hands on the books, Jonathan?
Yeah, I really appreciate you inviting me on the show. It's great being able to talk with folks in Arizona. So the book can be found pretty much wherever books are sold. Most people go to Amazon. There's a Kindle version, and there's an Audible version as well. And if they have any vision of wanting to see the stories, we have videos on the website, which is bellwetherbluesbook.com.
All right. Have a great Christmas. Maybe let's talk again in the new year, okay?
I would love that. Hey, have a Merry Christmas as well. God bless you and your listeners.
Oh, my gosh. I haven't heard of this one in a while.
Montel Jordan, birthday boy today.
Wow.
This is how I knew. This is the only one anybody would know, so.
That's it. No one ever says the words Montel Jordan and Deep Tracks in the same sentence.
So
790-2040 is the phone number. Let's go to the phones. We got Ryan Larson, the sports intern, the unpaid. I have to say that due to my accountants at Desert Rose Tax always tells me to say it out loud. Unpaid sports intern. Ryan, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Living the darn dream, Ryan Larson. Living the darn dream. I heard that the Pittsburgh Steelers played a lunchtime game yesterday on a Wednesday because, of God forbid, they got in the way of Al Roker and the crappy looking Rockefeller Center Christmas tree last night.
Yeah, if you didn't have anything to do yesterday afternoon after lunch, like you weren't working or had kids take care of or anything, you could have watched an NFL game on a Wednesday. Because the Ravens have had a COVID outbreak the last 2 weeks, basically.
Right.
And so they were originally supposed to play as the marquee game on Thanksgiving, which, if you recall, Thanksgiving was a week ago.
Right.
But the NFL has decided that we are not postponing, we are not canceling games anymore, mainly because every team has already used their bye week now. And so the NFL has nowhere to move games to. And so the Steelers and Ravens is originally postponed to Monday, and then it was Tuesday, and then finally they settled on Wednesday afternoon. And so you could just have your phone up at work watching some Ravens Steelers, and the game was ugly. It was terrible. The Ravens didn't have Lamar Jackson. And so Griffin III.
Oh, Robert Griffin. Oh, my Lord God, he's still playing football?
He is still playing football. He's the backup for the Ravens, but he got benched, and so third stringer Trace McSorley also threw a touchdown for the Ravens.
Marty McSorley's kid is playing football?
I don't know who Marty McSorley is, but
hold on. Stop it. Come in, Tom Callahan.
Ooh.
Tell him who Marty McSorley is.
Ryan Larson. So you're not a hockey guy, but Marty McSorley was Wayne Gretzky's bodyguard for his entire career, and you don't become the NHL's all-time leading point getter without a guy watching your back.
All right, that's who that is. A little education for the young man. He's usually amazing. But that's a little
Wayne Gretzky. That's Dustin Johnson's father-in-law, right?
Yeah. Oh, perspective. Thank you. Perspective. Zip it, youngin.
That was pretty good. Tell me about the couple of the key games in the NFL that happened this past weekend that should mean something out there.
So the biggest game of the week was the Chiefs and the Buccaneers play each other, and the Chiefs won the game. They were up big early. The final score was 27-24, but the Chiefs were up 24-0 early in the game. And for the Steelers being undefeated, they're 11-0. The Chiefs still look like they're the best team in the NFL by a pretty wide margin. The Steelers could finish the season undefeated. I'm still betting on the Chiefs to make it out of the AFC and to make it to the Super Bowl because they just look so dominant against the Bucs. They took their foot off the gas a little bit in the second quarter. But you still have Patrick Mahomes against one of the best defenses in the NFL throwing for 460 yards and 3 touchdowns. Tyreek Hill had 270 receiving yards in this game, and the Chiefs' offense is just unstoppable. And the fact that the defense was even able to slow down Brady and keep him to 24 points with 14 of those coming in the fourth quarter, it just feels like this is the best team in the NFL, and there's no other team that I've watched this season that I've been as impressed with. There's no other team that I think is able to even keep up with the Chiefs. Granted, once you get to the playoffs, it's just one game, win or go home every single game, and so there's a chance the Chiefs could get upset, but for all intents and purposes, they're the best team in the NFL. And then another notable game, not because it was good or anything, but I think it's worth talking about, is the Saints and the Broncos played, and the Broncos didn't have a starting quarterback. They didn't have a backup quarterback. They didn't have their practice squad quarterback because every single Denver Broncos quarterback got exposed to COVID days before the game. And the NFL decided, hey, too bad. None of your quarterbacks are playing despite three of them testing negative.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Did any of them test positive?
Just one. It was Jeff Driscoll who tested positive. He's the reason they all got exposed. But the rest of them all tested negative, but the NFL deemed them what's called high-risk contacts. And so they were not allowed to play. The Broncos started a guy by the name of Kendall Hinton who...
Hold your horses here for a sec, okay? Now, if I, and there's lots of situations where if you have a temperature, no one lets you on a plane, they don't let you into a doctor's office or whatever, right? But also there's things that if you test, you got to get tested for COVID and you come out negative, they allow you to do things, including, you know, get trapped in small vehicles that fly around the country and all these other things. So, but what you're saying is the NFL, even though these guys, you know, they're getting tested constantly, right? So
right, every day.
So that's what I don't get, is you're in an outdoor game running around, you know, and these guys are clean, but because they were near this guy, they could be, no one knows if asymptomatic spread goes on anyway. I haven't got a hard answer on that either. So, okay, so let's get back to this. So then they want to start the coach, one of the coaches, as a quarterback?
Yeah, they want to start the Broncos quality control coach who played quarterback in college. And
how old's that guy?
The NFL said no. He was 30.
Yes.
So he's not too old to play in the NFL, but certainly he was going to be a little rusty.
Why did the NFL shoot it down? What do they care?
Because he's not a signed player, technically, and I'm sure they're liability reasons. I did air quotes. You couldn't see them that the NFL had with that. But I think the NFL, the Broncos players, one of them, Kareem Jackson, the safety, basically was like, the NFL's making an example out of us because the Denver quarterbacks were all in the same room, not wearing masks, not social distancing. And so the NFL more or less was like, all right, we can't have this going on because we can't play you guys if you're all going to be around somebody who tests positive. And so they made an example out of the Broncos by not canceling the game, not even moving the game. Like the Ravens-Steelers game got moved to Wednesday, but the Broncos, they're like, you're still playing Sunday. We don't care. And so they had to start a practice squad wide receiver who did play a little bit of quarterback in college, but Denver for the game completed one pass. They had two interceptions. They attempted 9 total passes. And they scored 3 points, mainly because the Saints quarterback Taysom Hill threw an interception and gave the Broncos the ball in Saints territory so they could kick a field goal without having to move the ball. And it was a horrible game. It was entertaining for about 10 minutes, but after that, the charm kind of went away, and you're like, this is just sad.
I have a buddy of mine she's a huge, from birth, Broncos fan, okay? She took a picture of herself in her Broncos helmet, say, I'll play kind of thing. But every time, because they've had so much quarterback woes, right, from Brock Osweiler and all that thing.
Since Manny retired.
Right. I just keep doing hashtag bring back Tebow. I mean, this was the answer again, was to bring back Tebow and say, hey, let's do it. I know that half the Bronco fans hate him, but this is the time to bring him back. Bunch of fools.
As one of those Broncos fans, it's never the time to bring Tebow back. It is never the time to bring Tebow back.
I love how it triggers half you people.
I used to love asking Bronco fans for years, hey, who was the last Broncos quarterback to win a playoff game? And of course, for years, the answer was Tim Tebow.
It was 1 year.
It was more than 1 year.
They got Peyton Manning right after that.
What do we got going on this weekend, NFL? What should we be looking at this weekend?
So, some games in the first one in the NFC West, we have Arizona playing the Rams. And so that's a big game for the Cardinals because the Cardinals blew a game to the Patriots. They just did not play particularly well on offense, couldn't really move the ball. It's not like the Patriots' offense is very good at this point with Cam Newton, but they ended up losing. However, the Rams, who are a game ahead of the Cardinals in the NFC West standings, also choked in a game against the 49ers. So they're both coming off of losses. And whoever wins this game is going to be second in the NFC West, which will give them good position to A, make the playoffs, and B, avoid being the 7th seed in the wild card. And so this is a big game for the Cardinals if they can beat the Rams. Jared Goff for the Rams, he has some good games and he has some just really atrocious games, and he busted out an atrocious game against the 49ers. And so if Kyler Murray can get back to himself and play really well, then the Cardinals will likely win this game since it's at home. But if the Cardinals' offensive line, which has struggled during the season, can't stop Aaron Donald and the rest of the Rams' defensive line, it could be a long game for Arizona. So that's a big game with playoff implications. Another big game is Tennessee and Cleveland. I think the Titans are vastly better than the Browns. The Browns, despite they're going to make the playoffs because they're already at 7 wins apiece between the Titans and the Browns. So they're both going to make the playoffs, but the Titans have looked far better.
It's so weird to hear Browns with 8 wins. It's so weird to hear Browns with 8 wins.
They might be there, but they're going to be in the wild card, and I expect whoever they play in the wild card to just destroy them because the Browns just win close, ugly games. Baker Mayfield, at this point, the Browns are asking him to do nothing more than not turn the ball over multiple times a game.
It's a good place
to start.
They're
just relying completely on their run game. And it's working out for them. They're winning these ugly games, but I think the Titans are better, are more balanced. Derrick Henry is probably the best running back in the league, just destroying dudes every single week. And then Ryan Tannehill has been a reliable quarterback, kind of a little bit better version of Baker Mayfield, where they don't ask him to do too much. And so I think the Titans are going to win this game. But if the Browns can pull this one out on the road, then it would prove that they're more legit of a playoff contender than they've looked like, despite the fact that they're basically a lock to make the playoffs.
What's going on with the Arizona Wildcats? Forget about basketball. That thing's got to still find its feet. Let's go to football. Sorry, Arizona football. What's going on with Arizona football this weekend?
Well, Arizona lost again this past weekend to UCLA. Grant Gunnell, it's probably going to be out. He got hurt on the first play of scrimmage against the Bruins. And so they got Will Plummer coming in to take the reins as quarterback. And he was a three-star recruit. He's just a freshman. And he didn't look particularly good against UCLA. He only threw for 150 yards, and he had two interceptions. And
it's his first time out.
First time out. And that's going to happen as a freshman. But now they play Colorado at home, and Colorado is undefeated. They're quietly undefeated because they haven't necessarily had any extremely impressive wins, the Buffaloes, maybe because no one in the Pac-12 is very good at football. But they beat UCLA and Stanford in close games, and then they beat San Diego State. And now you've got 3-0 Colorado at the beginning of December. And I think Colorado's probably going to win this game. There's nothing about Arizona that's really inspiring confidence in me. Like, the defense held UCLA to 27 points, but Arizona could only get 10 against them, and Colorado scored 48 points against UCLA. So is Arizona going to be able to keep up offensively at this point? Probably not, but now Arizona has one of the five longest losing streaks in the country, which things are just not going well for the Wildcats. There's not much more to say to that than just between injuries and lack of consistency, the Wildcats have not been able to field a competitive football team this year.
We know the defense has lots of challenges. So if we're going to go into Colorado, Colorado's going to come here and they drop 48 on UCLA, and we got the freshman quarterback and a suspect defense, it could be a long, long day for the Cats on Saturday, I assume.
Yes, it could be a pretty long day, but that's been basically every game this year for Arizona, except that USC one, which was entertaining and also very inexplicable at this point.
So right now in the Pac-12, what's a couple of teams that even have a shot for this sham of a national championship thing?
Pretty much no one at this point, because Oregon choked against Oregon State last week. They lost that game, and Oregon hadn't looked particularly good to begin with, just based on name brand alone, Oregon was probably the Pac-12's best shot to make the playoff. But now with UCLA having a COVID outbreak USC having a COVID outbreak and missing a couple of games, then based on the college football playoff rankings, it doesn't seem like the committee is going to, it doesn't seem like the committee respects the Pac-12.
Nor should they.
None of them are even sniffing the top 10. And then B, with so few games, it doesn't seem like the Pac-12 is going to be able to make up any ground either. And so USC is probably the best shot, but even if they stay undefeated, it seems very unlikely that they're going to make the playoff.
Gotcha. All right, sir. Well, thanks for your work as always. We appreciate it. And when you get back to your computer, research Marty McSorley, okay?
Okay, I'm going to research more about Dustin Johnson's family as well, too.
Yes! All right, have a good weekend, man. We'll see you next week.
You too, Chris. Thanks.
All right, Christy Simone, that was Ryan Larson, the sports intern. What's the bassist's brother from 38 Special?
38 Special.
Yes! I love it. Wake up, Tucson. 10:30, The Voice! There we go. Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. Again, big day today. Ozzy Osbourne born and Andy Williams' birthday all on the same day. So we've done this before, these good big double days. Like Ed's birthday is Elvis and David Bowie on January 8th. So
that's a nice combo.
That's a great combo. So as we like to say, we got that going for us. So,
which is nice.
It's very nice. Let's talk about I don't want to spend too much time because she's useless. The state of the city by the mayor. Okay. So It was virtual. It was pre-recorded. They showed it on YouTube. I think someone said it was on Azteca Television. Great. And first of all, if more than 100 people watch this thing, I'd be in shock. Okay. So why now? Why would she do the state of the city's always in the first 60 days of the new year? And it's usually more of the, remember, as we've taught you, anything that's a state of is usually a rubber chicken dinner or lunch that the chamber or something like that puts on to make money. Now, most state of the anythings are useless because they're just bullcrapping you. And Jonathan Rothschild, I give him credit for the 8 years he was in office. Once in a while, he would say something. His first one was his greatest. I was sitting there. I almost fell off my seat. He said, oh, the city of Tucson has a customer service problem. I went, huh? What? That's amazeballs, right? We have a poverty problem that we need to fix. What? A mayor of Tucson said, what? I mean, that's amazing. And, you know, not much happened after that. And not all of it's Jonathan's fault. He got a very, 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 very special group of people that make up his council. So that's what happens. So why now? So there have to be two reasons she would do it now instead of. So she did it. I think one, she wanted on the Rona stuff, give her an opportunity to say, oh, the governor doesn't like anybody. He wants everyone to die. And I'm the patron saint of saving people from Corona. I think that's number one. Number two, I think that recall's in her head a little bit. Let me get out a commercial that says I'm so great. I had people calling me that watched it who were like, they went over the fact that she's the first Latina mayor and she got this and whatever. And, if we're in a situation emergency-wise, this is not a time to kiss your own butt and turn into an infomercial. If you really thought it was important to do it now, stick to why you thought it was important now. But most people who have seen the whole thing said it literally was a political infomercial for herself. But let's get to the part that I thought was so cute. The part that she really, 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 really stinks at, which is public safety. So there's friends of mine who are friends of hers who keep saying, well, why do you keep beating up her? Like if there's some police situation, right? And they say, well, you know, she's just been mayor for a year. She's been on the council for 12 before that. Her name and her votes on budgets to gut the police over those 12 years, she's on every one of them. And talk to a Tucson police officer with none of their commanders nearby and ask them what do they think the situation is on the ground for a Tucson police officer. And I keep hearing it gets more dangerous and more dangerous. And people that they would trust in command or other officers are just retiring or working in Oral Valley or other departments. So she highlighted, this is from the Star, this is from Jasmine Demer, who did the coverage on it. She highlighted efforts to support public safety, including facility renovations. Well, that's not going to help anybody in relation to, what's happening with the cops is that they don't know if backup's coming anymore. And that changes the dynamic of the encounter. And that's when things get a little hot. Chance to get hot increases when you know there's no backup coming. Changes the whole dynamic of this situation. Body camera purchases and vehicle replacements. Well, the reason that even exists is that the voters passed Prop something that paid for all the cop cars because these guys didn't pay for keeping the fleet up. She's on 12 years of votes that let the police cars fall apart. Then they had the gall to do postcard advertising that said, oh, this police car was going to go to some place to save someone, but they couldn't because it fell apart. Please give us more money. Well, that's on her. She's one of 7 votes that helped the police fleet fall into garbage. So Then she talked about the naked coked up guy and who died. And then she talked about how they hired six additional social workers to manage mental health calls. That was her public safety thing. So while cops feel more endangered than ever doing their job, we're in the top 15 of car thefts in America now. All right. And we know that the streets of Tucson are more dangerous than ever. She's talking about how she hired six social workers. That is Raheena Romero in a nutshell. Virtue signaling and not actually tackling the problem. So, as we like to say, as Joe Higgins will say, I'm sure it'll all work out. 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. The Sausage Shop on Channel 13. We'll get to that when we come back. Wake up.